grew from one little store to 50 stores strong and growing stronger every day.
Back inside the hall with Pete Souza. We are live from the Basketball Hall of Fame. And we are talking NBA trade deadline with NetsDaily.com editor Robert Windrum. Robert, welcome.
Good to be here, Pete.
All right, good to have you. You can get Robert at NetsDaily.com and also tweet him at NetsDaily. Now, Robert, lots to talk about. Obviously, we are in Springfield, the city of the Nets D-League affiliate. The deal with Reggie Evans and Jason Terry from Marcus Thornton. What are your thoughts on that? It just broke. It's going to become official. What are your thoughts on that deal as it is right now from an NBA perspective?
I think from an NBA perspective, what you have here is the Nets getting a lot younger. I mean, Reggie Evans is 33. He's about to turn 34. Jason Terry is 36. These are two guys who are now the 11th and 12th man on the team. Both of them have been underwhelming all year. And the Nets have decided to trade him, or trade them, for Marcus Thornton, who is having a tough year himself in Sacramento, but is only 26 and has had some very good years as a swingman in Sacramento. Sacramento wanted to get rid of him because he was making a lot of money and they're basically trimming costs. But for the Nets, I think what it does is it gets them younger, and it also gives them another shooter. And, you know, for long term, it's a good deal because he has some trade value, whereas Terry and Evans had very, very little.
So here's a guy that they can move going forward, too.
Exactly. He'd be a nice expiring at $8.5 million next year.
Okay. And now, being that we're in Springfield, obviously, as I mentioned, the D-League affiliate, how could this possibly affect the Armor here?
Well, there's one more shoe to drop here, and that's Jordan Hill. The Nets are willing to spend an enormous amount of money in luxury tax to take on Hill, who is a terrific offensive rebounder, good defender, which is one of the things they need when Kevin Garnett gets off the floor. But if that happens, they will be at 14 players, one short of the max. The question becomes is, would they then spend money to bring up people like Darius Odom or Adonis Thomas or Khalif Wyatt possibly to the big club and cost them an enormous amount of money? I mean, even if you brought up somebody like Adonis Thomas, who would be a rookie and wouldn't be making more than like $500,000, Adonis Thomas in luxury tax would cost them four times that much. So they would be making an investment, you know, of a couple, you know, of basically $2 million, $1.6 million, something like that, in Thomas for a 15th man, a little bit more for Darius Johnson Odom because he has some experience. It'd be very tough, I think, for the Nets to bring them up and justify that added expense.
So what happens to that last roster spot?
I think they hold it. Okay. I think they hold it for two reasons. I think the short term they hold it because, and this is unlikely, but it could happen, between now or tomorrow, the trade deadline, and March 1st, teams begin to jockey for players who are stuck on lottery teams, who are expiring contracts, and who want to go with a contender. If they can convince, you know, their general manager to waive them, they then become free agents who can sign with a contending club and make the playoff roster. That happens every year with one or two players. Last year, I believe it happened with Aaron Brooks.
Sure,
so short-term, they may want to do that. And then long-term, I think they actually, you know, may not want to open or close that roster spot because, simply, it's going to be costly.
In the hall with Pete Souza, Robert Windrum from NetsDaily.com. Robert, you've had some experience just talking with Mikhail Prokhorov. Is sky the limit with them? In the coverage you've done and of the Nets, is there no amount of money that they won't spend?
I used to think there was, but now I'm not so sure. I mean, who knows if they're going to get Jordan Hill, because obviously the Cavs are also interested in getting him, and the Cavs may have more assets. But I'm shocked at that, to be quite frank. I mean, everything I was hearing the last few weeks was that they want to pull back a little bit. But on the other hand, the history is if opportunity arises, it's something that they're willing to consider. And I think that what people have to think about when they think about how much money Prokhorov is spending is this. When he bought the Nets in 2009, when he made the agreement to buy the Nets in September 2009, he put down $223 million in cash for the team and for a big part of the arena, 80% of the team, 45% of the arena. Well, that investment now is worth close to $1 billion. So even if he's, adding expenses here and there, it's still been a good investment for him. It's been one of his best investments over the last 5 years, because you don't often find an investment where you get a 500% return. So I think that that factors into a lot of their thinking. And the other thing that factors into their thinking long-term is this. The pundits may say, oh, Prokhorov is ruining parity in the NBA. But the players and their agents see an owner willing to spend to win, and that is something very positive, particularly in New York.
And that's very interesting, both those points, the last one, of course, and the one you mentioned about, you know, sports ownership. Rarely do these guys end up in the black. And people really don't know that too much unless you take a real close look at it. Most sports owners, I mean, they're basically like toys or hobbies owning these teams, and that's why teams get bought and sold so quickly. So the fact of the matter is he's made a profit off that, which is something most people probably don't even know. When they think about him and see him spending money, they do ask a lot of questions. And moving on, I wanted to ask you, are there any other deals that you've heard whispers about that the Nets are looking to make or be a part of?
Not that I'm aware of. I think if Jordan Hill doesn't work out, then they have a decision to make. They were looking for a big man. They're looking for somebody who is a good defender, who does offensive rebounding, and Jordan Hill certainly does that. I would suspect that with 13 players on the roster, they would be looking for somebody else, that their interest would not end if Hill says no. Now, I also think that they're going to want to have an answer from the Lakers tonight, because tomorrow, 3 o'clock is when the deadline ends. Now, they may very well have something else cooking on the back burner, but I don't know what it is. But I'm very, very surprised that they were able to get any value, to be quite frank, for Terry and Evans. And what I've always said is that, this, how many times you use the ESPN trade machine, the reality never matches it. It's always a surprise. And so in this case, we may see a surprise as well. But, I mean, as to anything that I know of, nothing at all.
With Billy King's track record, he's a guy who makes a deal every draft day. So before the deadline, something's bound to happen. Moving on from the front office to the bench, Jason Kidd. Now, we've seen him evolve here, kind of removed. But watching him with a close eye, can you tell us how he's evolved?
Now, I was lucky to sit courtside a couple of weeks ago. And, I'm a season ticket holder, so I got an upgrade. And I had two other experiences, once with Avery Johnson and once with P.J. Carlissimo last year. And this was the difference. I mean, Avery would mutter to himself and be very, very nervous. PJ was, you could see that there wasn't a lot of confidence there because he knew that, he knew that his job wasn't safe. With Kidd, number one, it's all about confidence. But the other thing that I just found fascinating is that he could see the floor. He was making calls in concert with the ref. He was seeing things that were happening. I mean, this is what he did, obviously, as a player, and this is what he's doing as a coach. And the key, I think, for him is experience leading to confidence. This is not a guy who was going to quit. I mean, period. This is a guy whose entire career was about winning, whose entire career was putting everything on the line every night. And I never thought that this is a guy who was going to quit. And also, from my sources, I knew that there was almost no chance that Russian ownership was going to dump him. You've seen a much more improved coaching experience from him as he gains more confidence, and I think you're probably going to see more. He was Coach of the Month last month. He will be very much tried on this road trip. We have six games out west. And that, I think, is probably going to determine a lot of the season for the Nets. So what do I see coming up? I see the real test of this season. And he's going to be very much scrutinized on this road trip. He has the horses now. He has a fairly healthy team other than Lopez. So he is going to be put to the test on this in these next six games.
Robert Windrum from NetsDaily.com. Before I let you out of here, Robert, from a D-League perspective, and this may be a tough question, have you heard any whispers about Doug Overton and his improvement? And the two-pronged question, when you have guys like this, like Adonis Thomas and Darius Johnson-Odom, the Nets don't have their rights. So the idea that, hey, we're going to gather these D-League draft picks and develop these guys like the diamond in the rough, well, they lost Lorenzo Brown early in the season with that same mindset. Is the system somewhat flawed?
I think the system is somewhat flawed, and it's probably not going to be changed until every NBA team is required to have its own affiliate. And that's still a ways away. And within that context, that people have rights, like they do in baseball in particular, to have a true minor league. But what I think here is this, the Nets are very happy with the development of Adonis Thomas. Thomas is basically a project for them. Thomas is somebody who is the perfect risk. This is a guy who was an incredible high school player, had some problems at Memphis, not off-court problems, but problems finding a position. So they took a chance on him, knowing his talent, and it succeeded. Now, Darius Johnson Odom, the same thing to a certain degree, but he's a bit different because he's more of a proven guy, and he was drafted, and he played with the Lakers. He played with a winner. And they're very much aware that there's a risk here. And they're very much aware that, if these guys get good, and remember, Adonis Thomas is 20 years old, that he could wind up being picked up by somebody. Although with each passing game, that becomes less and less likely. What they would like to do, I'm sure, is have them in the summer league, have them in training camp, and hopefully, have them become a productive member of the Nets roster. It's a risk, but it's a risk they're willing to take.
Robert Windrum, NetsDaily.com. You can get him on Twitter, at NetsDaily. Robert, thank you so much for your time, and we look to talking to you in the future.
Sure thing. Happy to do it.